Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and co-parents of all ages, this podcast is for you. Introducing in the center ring, the amicable divorce expert, Judith Weigel.
When I was with the circus, fear was confronted on a daily basis by the performers, the promoters, and the roustabouts. Don't know about the circus clowns, if they had any fear or not, but I do know that some people are actually afraid of clowns. But that's another story. Anything could happen with dangerous acts, and they did. But if we let fear, if the performers let fear take hold, it would have gotten in the way of their success as performers. And so too with us. With the performers, we all knew the show must go on. The showtime waits for no man. That was our show mantra. And we did this and had this mantra because we had to confront fear on a daily basis. So in divorce, people live with fear over so many things. Living alone, money, not seeing the children as much, worrying that children might get hurt with the other parent. That's a huge fear of some people. And just basic survival. The daily communication with our spouses, the words we choose, the tone of voice we use, can make or break our fear level. If the communication is supportive, we can tackle the other life issues. If communication is not, everything goes to hell in a handbasket. So in this episode, we're going to explore fear and how to confront it so that you don't make mistakes in your decisions and in your communication going forward. I want to start off with something I hear so often when people call. Now, bear in mind, if you're listening to this podcast, it's about amicable divorces, right? So you would think when people call me, it would all be all about, Judy, we're amicable. We just want to do this well. No, 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 and no. There are so many times when I hear this at the beginning of the call. I'll take you for everything, followed by, you'll never get to see the children. This is what one spouse tells me they hear from their other spouse. I'll take you for everything if you divorce me, and you'll never get to see the children. Really? Not happening. Seriously, not happening. I was quite surprised that one spouse believes that this could actually happen and goes into fear mode. But it does. People seriously believe when their spouse says to them, I'll take you for everything, you'll never get to see the kids, and any other words to that effect. So here's what happens. The recipient of this information doesn't think rationally because it's such a shocking, startling thing to hear somebody say. The part of your brain, the frontal lobe, and I think most of us have heard about the frontal lobe in different ways or another, but the frontal lobe, which is 40% of the brain mass, goes into flight mode to the point where you're frozen and don't even seek professional advice from whomever the advice should come from, and in this case, it should come from an attorney. You're too afraid that this could be a reality. So you don't even ask anybody. And let me tell you, as sure as I'm sitting here, it's not a reality. The law won't allow one person to take everything from the other person. It just won't. I mean, I work in California to file as a paralegal on steroids, meaning I'm a legal document preparation company as well as being a mediator. So I know California law. Community property law. Other states have what's called an equitable distribution law. But there's no state that will ever allow one person to take everything from another person. Like, how does that work? How does that logistically work that one person can take everything? Does that person file in court and say, well, this is what we own. He or she owns this, I own that, but I want everything. And the judge says, okay, you can have everything. I mean, when you logic it out, and I know the frontal lobe, when it's in fear mode, flight mode, doesn't use logic. You do have to sit down with a person who can educate you, not your friends, like an actual person with a degree, like an attorney, like a therapist, like a divorce coach, people that understand that this could never, ever happen. This happens, though, when you're married to either a bully or somebody who's so afraid themselves to be divorced, like somebody who has inconsistent earning capability. They're absolutely afraid of getting divorced. No question. So, of course, they might say, you know, forget it. You want to divorce me? I'll take you for everything. As if it's a crime to divorce somebody. It is not a crime. It's not a crime against nature. It's not a legal crime. We're allowed not to be married to people if we find it unproductive, to say the least. But if you're married to a bully or someone who you've allowed to exercise control over you, then these statements are just more of the same, only they're statements on steroids because we're now talking about divorce. Divorce is a game changer. The law becomes the third person, so to speak, in your divorce, in the transition out of the marriage. So whereas in the marriage, you may have cowered if you're married to a bully, you may have compromised and just let that person run roughshod over you just to make peace. Maybe you have children and you didn't want to disrupt their lives, so you're allowing your life to be very sad and very unhappy, and you're allowing yourself to be controlled. But you don't have to do that. And if it's a case where you want to save your children from what you expect will be a negative result of divorce, they're living in a negative environment anyway if they're watching you be bullied. And this, I'm not just speaking to women. Women can bully men. Women aren't the only gender that gets bullied. So people will do it to each other, men and women. But you are giving your children an example of what to take from the other gender as they grow up if you continue to compromise and allow yourself to be bullied. So let's just talk more about, so why does one person do that? You know, it doesn't take much for me to ask a very simple question like, what does your spouse do for a living? When I'm listening to, I'll take you for everything. And so I'll say to that person, well, what does your spouse do for a living? And then will come the answer that generally comes. Well, it's inconsistent. He or she can't hold down a job. And so it's obvious they're afraid of money. They're speaking out of fear. So they're trying to create fear in you because they're actually experiencing fear themselves. And this can happen in any other phase of our lives. You may have a very dominating manager, superior, boss, who belittles you. No good leader belittles people that they are managing. No good leader does that. No good person, no person who's confident and secure and loving would ever do that to another person. So just to understand that anybody who speaks to you in an untoward way is going through some level of fear themselves, that is so unbelievably important to understanding how to react to a statement like that. So what do you do? So you're getting statements like, I'm going to take you for everything if you divorce me. I'm going to make sure you never see the children. Well, you can handle this by not speaking. Just don't speak. Just let them say what they're going to say. It's very interesting. If we don't react back, if we don't argue back, then the last words spoken are the words from your others, from your spouse. And those words will come back to haunt them. Those words will come back to create even more insecurity in them. Don't cry. Just be silent. Know that the threats can't really happen. Do not go into fear mode. Do not argue. Unlike your marriage, when there is no one there to create a balance of power between you and your spouse, if it's this kind of a contentious situation, in divorce, the law is there to create that balance. That is right. That is why it is so important to know the law. But you have to get legal advice. You have to educate yourself. You have to know what is and is not possible. The person saying they're going to take you for everything doesn't know the law either, but they do know how to put you in fear mode. It's so fascinating to me that somebody would actually have the balls, the gumption, to say, I'll take you for everything, as if that won't be uncovered at some point in time. But again, they're not thinking rationally either. You know, they're just making frontal lobe fear comments. That's all. And it will settle out. Eventually, they're going to get legal advice. And eventually, they're going to understand, okay, well, this is as far as I can go. I can't really push any farther than this. And okay, you know, if this is the full extent of what I can get, I'm going to try and get it. All right, I understand that. That's fine. But that's not controlling and bullying. That's, you finally got legal advice. Unless you both educate yourselves, unless you educate yourself, if you're the recipient of this untoward conversation, they have at least won the emotional battle and stopped you from moving forward temporarily. Reality. I've done this for about 10 years. I've worked in family law in California, and I have never seen one instance where one person took everything from the other person. Now, I may inherit clients that have gone through the court system. Maybe it's a paternity case where they weren't married and it's all about custody and child support. And maybe that person felt that the court was unfair to them, but it's never been a situation where they completely lost custody of their children unless they did something horrible, domestic violence, drug abuse, something horrible. They're not going to lose relationship with their children. In a divorce situation, again, unless there's something really abusive or self-incriminating by the other spouse, you know, you're both going to share time with your children and you're both going to divide assets and debts. It's the way it is. It's not going to change. People can make settlement agreements, though, also, that may be weighted a little more on one side than the other. I mean, I've seen that happen. I've looked at settlement agreements that have already been made. The divorce has been final, but one person wants to revisit it. Maybe they need to modify child support, modify spousal support. Maybe something in the settlement agreement has been breached and now they want to take care of it. But that's generally because there's been a voluntary settlement agreement. Not all settlement agreements are equally weighted if the parties themselves have made the settlement agreement. But if you go into court, the judge is required to make decisions in certain ways, and it's based on the law. You know, the law can be interpreted slightly differently and argued a little differently by attorneys. That's their jobs. That's what they do. Or if you're self-represented, that's what you do when you go to trial or you go to a hearing. But it won't be 100% on one person's side and 0% on another person's side, again, unless something horrible has happened. but never in a divorce have I seen all assets get assigned to one spouse and complete custody, and the other person can never, ever, 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 in any situation ever, see their children. Something absolutely horrible, like you're in jail for the rest of your life for murder. Okay, maybe, but how many times does this happen to the bulk of the people? Not that much. You must get educated. You must learn the skills of communication back. Communication is a trick. Communication is your best friend. Communication can bring control in your life. Knowing when to speak, how to speak, knowing how to diffuse a situation, knowing how to speak from the I position, that's what we talk about in mediation all the time. Not blame, speak from I. So if you really feel that you need to engage in conversation with the person who's going to supposedly take everything, including your children, then do it differently. Don't do it as an argument. First of all, let them finish. And if they are there and wonder why you're not communicating back, just say something like, I just wanted you to finish. I just wanted to let you speak. I wanted to hear everything you wanted to say. I mean, like this tone of voice that I'm using. Don't be sarcastic. That never works. Ever, ever, ever works. Sarcasm just fuels the argument. You really have to teach yourself how to breathe. Breathing allows you to calm down. And when you calm down, you can listen. Listen through what the other person is saying. Listen to what they really, really mean. And maybe you even can say something back like, are you afraid too? Just something simple like that. Are you afraid too? I'm afraid. Divorce is a foreign territory to me. I don't really know the law. Do you know the law? I think we should get attorney advice. I think that's really important that we know the law. Oh, you know what? Forget it. You know, I know. I've already gone to an attorney. I already know, and I'm going to take everything from you. Okay, no. I would venture to say that person's not telling the truth. Keep on being calm. Keep on saying, okay, all right, well, if you've gone to an attorney, and the attorney said that you can take everything from me, okay. I'm going to go to an attorney. I'd like to know if that's true. And then I guess we'll talk again about this. But you really have to, you just have to practice speaking in a different way. And you really have to practice tone of voice. You know, it's the words we choose and the sound of our voice, the tone of our voice. The tone of our voice is tough. I mean, we can maybe master words, but mastering the tone of voice means we have to have already had a transformation of feeling. If we haven't had a transformation of feeling, if we haven't gone through not blaming, accepting that maybe I don't want to go through divorce, this is a drag, I thought I'd always be married, you got to go through a divorce. If this isn't the person you're going to be happy with, you got to go through a divorce, except if your religion doesn't allow it. So I'm speaking to that part of the listenership that would allow divorce. Legal separation, by the way, for the religions who don't allow for divorce. Legal separation is an option, at least in California. But back to communication. You really have to go through your own personal journey to accept that your life is going to change, to thank the world that they've brought you this opportunity to dig deep within yourself, to find the courage to go forward with something painful. That's a huge deal. And if you go through that journey first and get to a place where you don't hate the other person, you don't blame the other person, you accept that life has given you an opportunity to be courageous, to craft a new life, then you can communicate. Then you can communicate calmly, without fear. And maybe you're going to have to be the one that says, look, maybe you feel this way about me now that you want to take me for everything. But I don't want to take you for everything. I don't want to do that to you. How do you think somebody would feel if you said that to them? Think about that a second. How do you think somebody would feel if you said that to them? I don't want to take you for everything. I don't want to hurt you. You know, that's really hard for somebody to come back and say, well, I want to hurt you. I hate you. And I don't know. I mean, and even if they did, that's not where you're at. And you can live within your own space calmer because you've done that work to get yourself positioned to not hate, not blame, and to look forward to growing. Huge, absolutely huge. And you might be able to lead your spouse down a better path if you just don't react in the typical way of fear, fight or flight, and arguing back. All right, now I want to give you a couple more stories of real life situations where fear got in the way and they did not take the opportunity to educate themselves. Situation, man and a woman are married. Woman has very, very serious mental health issues to the point where she had to be hospitalized for a while. Like very serious issues that either only medication would take care of, or maybe nothing, maybe constant emotional mental supervision. So gets out of the hospital and files for divorce. Now, lest you think people with mental illness can't walk around and have jobs and have conversation and appear to be normal for a while, they can. They absolutely can. I mean, look at Howard Hughes, America's first billionaire, mentally ill, had mental illness while he was acquiring wealth, and then, of course, completely broke down. But yes, mental illness is a very serious issue. So this particular couple, The husband gets served with papers for divorce. The attorney representing the woman has no clue that she has serious mental illnesses because she's not going to tell them. She doesn't believe she does because she's mentally ill. She does not know. So he's served with divorce papers. He goes into fear mode, hides them for a couple weeks, doesn't want to deal with it. And then eventually has to bring them out and looks for help. Somebody to tell him what to do with the paperwork. And he has a choice on his response to the petition, the initial paperwork he was served with. He can choose to say that his wife has serious mental illness issues. But he doesn't want to do that. He doesn't want to consult an attorney, money, and language barrier. Now, this is interesting. So often, people that don't feel confident speaking English will not look for professional help, will not go to attorneys, will not go to other people who can help them because their concern over their language communication issues stops them in their tracks. And not even fear over not being legal, obviously, I'm talking about people that, you know, have been born in other countries and come with a different language. They may be perfectly legal, but still, they will live in fear that their communication skills aren't good enough. And so they live in a very small world. And in this particular situation, husband did not let the attorney know what was going on with his wife, did not look for legal advice before sending in the response. And of course, there was the fear of money. Attorneys cost a heck of a lot of money. But sometimes you just have to spend some money in order to get control in your life, be educated, and make the right decisions. And that's really where we're going with this. Because you can start making bad decisions and it'll simply cave in on you. And then the money you have to spend to get out of the situation will be far more than if you got legal help first so that you could deal with this properly. I venture to say that if husband had A, sought legal advice and properly responded to the wife's attorney, I bet this could have been settled so much better. Because not all attorneys are created equal. You know, some attorneys are very compassionate. Some attorneys want to settle out of court. Some attorneys really want to do the right thing and not charge you every cent they could possibly charge you, but really expeditiously help you make the decisions for you that are correct. And then there are other attorneys that will take a situation and get as much money out of it as they possibly can. There are, but you know that. You'll see that along the way. Get rid of the attorney. Get somebody else. There's a ton of attorneys in every city. You know, just get a decent attorney who will say, okay, come on, let's be practical. We have a woman who is severely incapacitated. We have an attorney now that needs to know this, so the attorney can understand that what they're doing, how they're proceeding, is inappropriate if they think that their client is functional and completely there. So you'll spend a little more money than you wanted to, but far less money than if you say nothing and you hide. And you put paperwork aside that you're served with. I mean, things have a time to them. If we don't respond in time to certain things, we could be filed, contempt motions could be filed. We could be sanctioned. Anything horrible could happen. So at this point, in this particular case, husband is at a crossroads. Husband can seek professional help, look at what the assets are and see what he can do with the assets that he has to spend to communicate reality to the other attorney in a way that only husband can do. I mean, check HIPAA laws. I know there's laws around what can be said and how it can be said, but an attorney will know how to get around that or work with that. That's why you absolutely need an attorney. You cannot fear the cost of hiring an attorney even for a little bit of time, even to get through the major portions of a divorce filing that only an attorney can do, and then you can hire other people. You know, I'm a legal document preparation company. I don't know that every state has somebody like me, but there are self-help centers at courthouses. Maybe hire an attorney to teach you, just to explain the law, and so that you could do it yourself. I mean, you have options that you don't even know you have if you don't consult an attorney. So this is the crossroads that this gentleman is at right now. The case is ongoing. And I'm praying that this man hires an attorney for at least a short period of time, at least to communicate his wife's condition and to see how that changes the case. At least that, to see how that changes the case. So that's my point here. Do not fear spending money. Do not fear getting legal advice. And do not worry if your communication skills aren't perfect. Anybody in family law is understanding of that. They really are. You will find somebody who may speak your language. I mean, most cities are multicultural. You can ask for attorneys that speak your language, and now you've moved that aside. That is no longer something to worry about. Okay, let me go to another one. This is a fascinating case to me. A couple is married for a while, has a daughter. Then they decide to file for divorce. A few years goes by, and the divorce isn't complete. But they decide that they don't really want to get divorced. So they dismiss the divorce. One of the reasons why they dismiss the divorce is because another child was born. And this a lot of times changes the game. As you may know, listening, you may have friends that because of a child stayed together. And maybe their marriage worked. Maybe the second child or even the first child enabled them to stay married. It doesn't always work. A bad marriage is not healed by having a child. You better have a good marriage before you have a child. But in this particular situation, a second child was born. Divorce is dismissed. And now several years goes by. But In the divorce proceeding, there was a wage garnishment attached to the husband's employer. So around $1,000 or so was taken out of the husband's paycheck for the during the divorce proceedings, which were 8-9 years ago. And even though they dismissed the divorce and remained married, that wage garnishment was still in place. And so now the divorce is going to be filed for a second time by the husband. And the husband finally talks about why he never went to an attorney to dismiss the wage garnishment, or at least get with the self-help center to find out what paperwork do I need in order to show my company that the divorce is dismissed, therefore there's no need for wage garnishment. We're living like a family. I'm providing for the family like I always have. Fascinating, right? Except when you find out this one other piece. The second child wasn't his. The second child was somebody else's. I'm not sure when husband knew that the second child wasn't his. I'm kind of thinking not immediately, because husband is on the birth certificate. Child has husband's last name. Husband is dad to the child. Husband is the only person called dad. And husband loves the child, even after he finds out that the child isn't his. Husband really loves the child. Husband now knows who the father is. The father is introduced as, I don't remember, to be honest with you, uncle, cousin, friend. So biological dad does come around his child. But he's just not defined as dad. Non-biological dad is defined as dad. Non-biological dad never went to an attorney to ask, what's the law? If I now know the child isn't mine, but the child is calling me father. I'm supporting the child, and I absolutely still want to support the child. Now, isn't that cool? I still want to support the child. I mean, I love that. I love this person for wanting to do this. You know, in this world of parents neglecting their children, what a wonderful human being who wants to still take care of this child. You can love children that aren't yours. You know that. So, husband really has to consult an attorney. But fear of losing the child was stronger than the money that was taken out of his check. So for 6+ years, money was taken out of his check. Still is. Until it gets unraveled. But the fear of losing the child was stronger than the fear of money, which, okay, first of all, how can you not want to wrap your arms around this man and say, God, what a great human being you are? But now that he really wants to get divorced and wants to move his life forward and has somebody wonderful, somebody else wonderful in his life, he really wants to still take care of this child. And this child cannot be more loved. What a great situation. But he had to be pushed to consult an attorney. He really had to be pushed because he was so fearful. And I work in California. I don't know the other states, but if this is happening to any of you listening or anybody that you know, please, I beg you to talk with an attorney and find out what the law is. And I would be shocked in any other state if non-biological dad was not allowed to continue being dad and supporting the child. Even if biological dad appears and wants to be dad too, I would be shocked, but this is definitely legal advice territory. And lastly, third story. This is about a couple who are getting divorced currently, and there's money. There are assets, there's money, but there's a lifestyle that even exceeds the assets. And listen, you can have $500,000, $700,000, $1 million combined that you both live on, and you can exceed what you spend. I mean, you can live a lifestyle that's dramatic. So, okay, couple getting divorced. He makes a lot more than her, but she actually has a very livable wage. They're both very sweet people. And he really does want to do well by her, but there's still a lot of anger being processed over money. Money was a big issue in the marriage. The spending of money. There was money to go around, but then there were lavish expenses that are not always part of everybody's family expenses. And she, from what I see, is afraid of losing that lifestyle. I'm thinking that she's afraid that she may not be able to live on the level that she has been living on. I think just by being in Hollywood and dealing with a lot of movie producers and directors, that when they are living on less, it's very hard for them to modify their lifestyle. Very hard. I was actually quite surprised at a couple I had years ago. He produced some enormously famous films. Some of them were some of my favorite films. And it was just a different day. His career had changed. He wasn't making the money he used to make, not by a stretch. And this is really prevalent in the Hollywood television and film industry, that you have to keep appearing to make what you used to make. That facade is so important. The cars they drive, where they live, the vacations they go on, going to Cannes, you know, for the film premieres. It's hard for them to give up that lifestyle, and the wives as well. You know, the wives get used to a lavish lifestyle. And they look at their self-worth as being defined and framed by that, by the money and the money and the lifestyle that the money can buy. And that's a little bit of what I'm seeing in this one particular situation. That not being able to live at a certain level, to shop at a certain level. You know, we have Rodeo Drive, and Rodeo Drive isn't going anywhere. And Rodeo Drive is not for everybody. And sometimes you may not be able to shop on Rodeo Drive. Neiman Marcus, by the way, is on Wilshire. It's not on Rodeo, but Chanel's on Rodeo. Prada's on Rodeo. Gucci's on Rodeo. Saks and Neiman's are on Wilshire. Barney's is on Wilshire. But listen, to not be able to go shopping like you want to not be able to engage in some of the activities that you're used to, if you are framed and defined by money, you have to change. That is not what your self-worth is. You know, Will Smith on Instagram, I was looking at some very famous people are giving wonderful quotes on Instagram now. And Will Smith, I just was watching something he said, listening to what he said. He said, money is not going to bring you peace and happiness. Okay, Will, babe, but by the way, we are more secure when we have money. But money cannot frame you, cannot define you, cannot make you happy. People who live on a lot less than Will Smith are happy. And I bet and hope, of course, that if Will Smith had to live on less, he would still be happy. I hope. We cannot allow money to define us. First of all, people don't really know what we have in our bank accounts. They don't. A lot of times, people just make choices in scaling down how and where they live just so they can do other things with money, so money can be freed up. And so what if we have to live on less because we're divorced? So what? There are so many things that we can do that are not enormously expensive things. Now listen, while I'm saying this, I watch Below Deck, which is a reality show on Bravo, because I love to see these yachts that people are on. It gives me hope for the future for me. It really does. But I'm not sad. I'm not unhappy that I can't own a yacht. You know, there's other ways to get on the water and enjoy water sports or traveling on the water. But when you're getting divorced and you have X number of dollars living in one household, living in two households, you're just neither person. Even the person earning more money is not going to be able to live on the same amount of money that he or she used to live on. It's not going to happen for either person. You must make adjustments. But if your friends are really your friends and they see you making these adjustments in your life because you simply have to, they will respect you. And if they don't, get rid of them, boot them out. No. Your really good friends will respect that you took a tough situation and turned it around. You do not need to fear that you don't have as much money to live on as you used to. You really don't. You can dress yourself up without going to Prada and Chanel and look fabulous. You honestly can. You don't have to fear about losing social standing. There are so many wonderful people in so many areas of life who will raise you up and allow you to feel good about yourself again. And you don't have to have the same amount of money. Money can't buy you love. Money can't buy you happiness. Money buys you security. I'll give you that. Certainly gives me security when I have money. But I'm the same person, regardless of how much money I'm making, and so are you. Do not fear not having as much money as you used to have. You can always make it back. If you want to make more money, you can do that. You have that ability. But you can't fear money. You can't fear losing social standing because it's just smoke and mirrors. Who cares? Because if you ripped that social standing around away from other people, you'll find that they fear things. They have issues. They're just a little, you know, they just dress up with more expensive clothes, but they still have issues to deal with. You never know what goes on behind closed doors. So here's what we have to do going forward. In order to confront fear, in order to get rid of fear, in order to control fear and let yourself be free, it's only through reality. Reality will set you free. And how do you get to reality? You call an attorney if you need legal advice to explain to you what the law is. And even if you're hearing a little something you're not happy with, it doesn't matter. You will adjust and you will deal. It is what it is, what it is. So you'll call an attorney, you'll get legal advice. And then you'll call a therapist for emotional support and courage. We all need people around us, professionals, who can let us talk and mirror back to us what we just said in a way that will allow us to say, okay, I know what changes I need to make. Okay, I can do this. I can move forward. All you have to do is want to. It starts with that. If you want to change, if you want to deal with fear, if you want to overcome and grow through the challenges you're presented with, you will. You absolutely will. And then lastly, for those who are dealing with people who bully them, people who don't treat them well, there's a gentleman that I have talked about for the last 2+ years, Bill Eddy, E-D-D-Y, Bill Eddy. Bill Eddy started out as a family law attorney, then became a licensed social worker, and finally became a mediator. And he's written about 24 books, sorry about that. Sorry, Bill, didn't mean to shortchange you on the number of books, about 24, 26 books. You can get them all on Amazon. They're also on my website, by the way, either divorceresourceinc.com or theamicabledivorceexpert.com. I have these resources on both of my websites. This man will teach you communication skills that you can use anywhere in your life, but starting with dealing with somebody who is a high conflict personality. High conflict personalities are the ones that bully you. High conflict personalities do have mental health challenges all their own, personality disorders, and you have to know how to work with them. You really do. And you can do it. Facing reality will set you free, and you do not ever have to live in fear again. That's the end of our episode. Thank you for joining me today. As always, I appreciate every single one of you. Tell anyone you know about to go through divorce or who are in the middle of divorce to subscribe to this podcast. Our resources are boundless. Our information invaluable. Take care.
That's our show for today. Thank you for joining us. Be good to yourselves, be kind to your spouse, and cherish your children above all else.